Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Sickcast. My name is Manpreet Jussel. You could find me at mjussel on Twitter. Very happy you're joining us today. Today I have Inni Kaur, who's a vice president of Spectrum Communications. It's a advertising and design firm based in Norwalk, Connecticut. You may know her from Journey with the Gurus. It's a children's book series based on the life and teachings of Guru Nanak. It was very, very inspirational and powerful talking with her today. And I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy it. From a person who was born in Kuwait, lived in New Zealand, Australia, and Greece, came to America in the early 80s, didn't have any connection with Sikhi, but was born into a Sikh family, and how she is now, who's writing about life and teachings of Guru Nanak, who is translating Hukamnamas on Facebook. Truly, truly inspirational. You're going to have, there's a lot of gems in our conversation today, so I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for joining, and here's Inni Kaur.
Okay, Inni, so I'm sure many listeners don't know about your background, and I think it's a pretty interesting background. So please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Manpreet, for having me on, and Guru Fateh to all your listeners. The background, I am a product of the diaspora. I was born and raised in Kuwait City. Went to a Roman Catholic boarding school for the formative years of my life. So probably I would say the Christian influence was very heavy in my life growing up. Life takes over, you get married, you travel. I lived in New Zealand, Australia, Greece before coming to the United States, and have stayed on here since then. That's pretty much my background.
No, sure. That's pretty interesting. So you've been pretty much away from Punjab, I think, your whole life.
Yes, I have probably set foot in Punjab for probably 2 days or 3 days when I went to visit Darbar Sahib in Amritsar. That's my extent of Punjab. And my extent of India has been probably every year I go, I try to get there every year for, 10 days. And I am a total foreigner there. I have no idea how the country functions or what I am supposed to do while I am of Indian descent. And I look very, quote, unquote, Indian. I'm a total foreigner.
You know what? That is really interesting. And I'm saying that because since I know you and what you have done for the Sikh Research Institute, and before we get there to the present day, how did a person like you, a person that has been away from the large Sikh community and like you said, been to India for a few days and Punjab a few days, when did you feel that connection to Sikhi? When did that happen in your life?
To be truly honest, while I grew up in a Sikh family, I would not call myself a Sikh. Yes, to the world I was a Sikh because I didn't know anything about Sikhi. I was probably a cultural Sikh. You go to the Gurdwara, you do whatever you are supposed to do, and you leave without really any connection whatsoever. To tell you the truth, my wedding was the first wedding I attended. So that's how clueless I was. I think 1984 was a turning point in my life. I was in the United States. I remember reading about what happened at the Darbar Sahib and watched a little bit about it. And there was an awakening, sort of a, why? And I felt pain, which was unusual because at that point in my life, I did not identify myself as a Sikh. I don't think when you're that young, you want to be identified as anything, except, let alone be identified with a religion or a faith. But that was, June, I remember, was a time when I felt pain. And come October, November, it was intense pain. I was at that point glued to the television, trying to figure out, you know, what was happening, why it was happening, because I didn't really know anything about Punjab, about the faith, but I knew there was something deep inside which shook. That that pain, that internal pain, made me go within and to figure out why this pain and why do I feel like that. And the journey within began to figure out who I am, what I want in life, what makes me happy. And that took me on a very, very different path. And I had to discover it for myself. To say that I went immediately into the faith would be wrong. But what I did do was I did stop cutting my hair at that point. And by 1985, I wore the kada. So for me, these were small steps. While for the world, they may be, small steps, for me, they were monumental because I was identifying with a faith which I knew nothing of. So the journey into the faith began. And I was not totally committed because I had very heavy Christian leanings, and I have very heavy Sufi leanings because I was very much into the path of Sufism, and I had a Sufi master and everything along that line. But it was, but I couldn't submit to the Sufi path. As much as I tried, there was something that held me, and, my Sufi master knew that. And I asked him a question at one point, and he looked at me and he said, if I answer that question, you will leave me. If I answer the question truthfully, you will leave me. And I said, how can the truth make me leave you? But he said it would. And when he did tell me the answer, I did leave. So he was right. And I'm, eternally grateful to him and to that path. But that brought about, while I was, how should we say, a person has feet in both places, not in both places, one foot in Sikhi, trying to figure out, is this the right path for me? Not really knowing, because I didn't know Punjabi. I spoke very, very little. Of course, reading and writing was out of the question. I understood, but I didn't speak. My understanding was also limited. So there was a period of great turmoil, and in that turmoil, something obviously happened that there was grace, and why, to this day, I will never know, and Shabad entered my life. So when Shabad entered my life, it was a turning point in my life. At that point, then every other path just, I left, and this was the path that embraced me. I would not say that I embrace it. It was really the Shabad embraced me. The Shabad has nurtured me at that point and continues to. So when I refer to Guru, I always refer to Guru as Shabad, because I did not grow up with the stories of the Gurus, of Guru Nanak, Guru Nanak Sahib and all the subsequent Gurus. I did not, I heard a little bit about them, but that did not capture me. What has held me and what I consider as my guru is the Shabad, because the Shabad has chiseled me. The Shabad has changed me inside out, and it is to the Shabad that I bow, and I revere that. That answer your question, Manpreet? It's a bit long-winded.
No, that's great. I'm very happy I'm doing this podcast, because I would have probably never known that about you, what I just heard. So, wow, that's totally interesting. I never knew the Sufi side of it. I definitely read Sufism. I listen to the Punjabi Sufis, the Persian ones. Definitely great inspiration and a great kind of a supplement into for poetry and to read more Shabad. But that was very interesting. I mean, your Sufi master was very true in what he did. So that's awesome. So yep. If Shabad got you, right? And I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people read Gurbani and they read Shabad, and everyone has, it's the same verse, but everyone has different ways of interpreting it, right? So let's start with how you took that Shabbat, embraced it, and kind of like, I guess, dive into how you, maybe you wanted to learn more. How did you interpret Shabbat for yourself? What did you read? Is this where the stories came in to give you the context around things? How did you go about that?
You know, the stories came much later on in my life, because Shabbat had to chisel me. Shabbat was chiseling. I felt a direct connection, and I still do. It is, you know, whatever question that I have or wherever I am, it is the Shabbat that answers it. And it is truly a conversation. It's hard to explain it in words, but it is when I'm with the Bani, or the Bani is with me. Actually, the Bani is with me. It is, I feel very, it resounds within. And it is like a dialogue I am having within. And I'm, you know, I have submitted. I bow. I cry. It is, if you can say, appealing. It is layers upon layers that I lose or leave me, and I feel I can smell, I can taste the essence of Bani. It is the purity. It is that fragrance that just stays with me. And when I can't connect with that, then I am really lost and confused, and nothing makes sense. So the entire purpose, I mean, not the entire, so my thought or at every point in time is, so long as I'm connected, I'm centered, I'm well. When I'm not connected, I'm not centered, and so therefore I am unwell. You know, there's a great line that, let every breath be in your name. I truly do relate to that, because any breath that escapes without that remembrance is a wasted breath. That's how I feel. So for me, it is I have been able to connect to that source without having a human guiding. Because it is the Shabbat that is guiding. The power is in the Shabbat. The Shabbat is the Guru. And I truly feel that. I mean, when, you know, that the Shabbat is the Guru, it is in my life, and the way I have experienced it, it is absolutely true. So when it becomes the truth for you, no matter what the world says, it doesn't really matter, because you have experienced it for yourself. It's hard to explain it to somebody, because it's their experience and everyone's experience is different. But my experience has been with the with absolutely the Bani, the exquisiteness, the purity, the love, the warmth, the embrace, the it is like the shawl of Gurbani is around me. And when I get to the place where I need sustenance, or I need where I'm drifting, it is that shawl that I wrap around tighter. And when I do that, it is when the world is in chaos and the mind is going at 100 miles an hour, I go to Shabbat, I take a Bani, and I start to work on it, or actually the Bani works on me, and I start to try to get to the deeper understanding of it. And that's how my translation work of the Bani began. It was because that I knew was the only thing that held me. So I would take each word, each line, each thought, and would stay with me for months. I mean, I did the Bani of Anand Sahib, And probably that is the bani that worked on me the most. It chiseled me. I mean, there are 40 pauris to it, which I did not realize. When I went in, I thought there were only five. Little did I know. So you can guess that what I knew was next to nothing. And once I had committed to doing the 40, it took me over a year and a half to do that. But that bani really changed me, because it was step by step for me. The way I took it was Guru telling me, this is what you need to do. Your eyes, your tongue, your hands. I mean, it was chiseling that has probably was the hardest, because many times I just wanted to put it away. It was just way too painful to look within. Because when you look within, what you see is, at least what I saw, was not very attractive. In fact, it was ugly. So I had to get rid of that ugliness, of that things that was not what I liked. And that was hard. But, it was a commitment. It was grace, again, that I stayed. And that bani has stayed with me. It says stays at every point in time, every day. You know, before I speak, before I do anything, you know, that bani comes in. Is this the right thought?
How so you are if here I, for if I, purpose? Okay, so if let's take the... So there's two types, right? So there's the chiseling that you're doing spiritually, and then there's the practical chiseling. So let's talk about the practical one, because spiritual one, that's different to different people, how they interpret it, how they're going to go about it, what they're going to do. Let's talk about some practical things maybe that we can relate to someone out there. So it's like, you're reading it, you're interpreting it, you're finding out your own meanings of it. How did in the practical everyday, like, how did that affect you in the sense, what I'm trying to get at is like, are you nicer to your neighbors now? Do you love your coworkers more? Like what practical things that everyday Sikhs are doing out there, that you could probably, mention a couple that happened that bani had that effect on you?
It was the consciousness. It's the consciousness of oneness. All of a sudden, you know, there is no other. And so there's a tremendous amount of responsibility you feel that the kindness has to be spread. So before you even speak, utter a thought, is this in the highest interest? Is what I am saying for the greater good? If I am serving, is it for that highest purpose, or is it for my ego? It's a constant check on what you are doing. I'm not so concerned about the world. I'm more concerned at this point about myself, because each one of us, our actions define the world. So if I'm living in that consciousness, the highest consciousness, or trying to, of course you fall many times. And there's a greater, I mean, the patience came. The anger left, the kindness set in. There is a quality of sahaj, which they say is that serenity, because all of a sudden it is you're not the doer. There's somebody else. There is a greater doer, and you are following that, and you are in that consciousness to do the greater good. So there's a lot that leaves you. Struggle, that duality. Probably the most important thing for me was that duality, is to be something outside for the world and to be something within. For me, it was very important to be that same person, that whatever I am outside, I need to be that inside. So it's something which I still work with. I don't know whether I can give you an answer. I know it has made a profound difference in my life. When your mother tells you you are not the same person that you were, you know there is a change. But what, only she would know, or, the people who have known me growing up. Yes, they all tell me that I am not that. But then none of us are all that, because, life experiences, we all change.
No, I'm totally, totally with you on that. All right, so I know we don't have that much time, but let's fast forward a little, and let's talk about how you got to write a couple of books called Journey of the Gurus. What inspired you to write that, and how did you go about it and making sure it's, I know the Sikh Research Institute backs it up, but how did you go about it to make sure that the stories will resonate with the audience you're trying to reach, and also that they're authenticated?
So, I mean, this was, resonate, yes. Authenticated is a question mark. So I write in the stories that they're retold. So they're retold through my lens, through my eyes, through my heart. I came about writing these stories was interesting. It was my husband's birthday, and we were at dinner, and my girls were teasing him. My girls, who are in their 20s and 30s, were teasing him with the stories that he had read to them. They remembered every story that he had read to them as a child. And at that point, I gasped and I said, oh my gosh, if they had read the Sakhis, if we had read the Sakhis to them, they would have learned them by now, and remembered them. But there were no books of that quality. I'm quite a stickler. When you give a child a Disney book and Angelina the Ballerina, and then you give them a guru book, which is printed on shabby paper with poorly written, you are already creating a substandard in their mind. And I didn't want to do that. So I would tell them the stories and work with them. But there was no such book. And then a voice within me said, well, why don't you write the stories? And I said, but I've never written a story. The voice was very clear. You will write the stories. And I began writing the stories. So the book which I referred to was Guru Nanak Chamatkar, because Paisa Pai Veer Singh Ji, I was reading him at that time. In fact, he was Pai Veer Singh when I began, and through my journey with reading him, he has now become Pitaji, and I refer to him as Pitaji now. That is the power of his books, what they have done for me. So I referred, I have used that as a basis, Guru Nanak Chamatkar, for Journey with the Gurus. And, that most of the dialogue, I would say 85% to 90% of the dialogue is from there, because it's absolutely exquisite. It's breathtaking. There are multiple levels in Guru Nanak Chamatkar. Of course, I have taken the ones which are easy for the children to understand. But there are layers in it. And it's amazing when I refer to them as children's books, the people tell me they are not children's books, they are family books, because we are learning so much from them. So that is my level of trying to get it, the authenticity. I refer to the Sikh, encyclopedia. I try to do all that to make sure that it is as close as possible. Are errors have made, or I'm sure there are, like in everything, because these are retold. And these stories have been passed down to us from generation to generation. The next question you had asked, how do you know whether these stories resonate with the children? Every story that I do write, I send it to 5 sets of children around the United States for their feedback. And they provide me with their feedback, whether they could understand it, whether the message was clear, whether the story was too long, too short, what I needed to change. And I do all that before it, I send it for layout and for the editing process and layout and everything that sort. So every story is really, has gotten the feedback of these children. And believe me, our children are very critical. If something makes no sense, they'll tell you, this makes no sense. It's brutal, you know. I send the stories and I'm just on pins and needles because I don't know what's going to come back. Because wow. many times it has said, come back, this makes no sense. And they're right, because if I'm writing for them, it has to connect with them. And that's how the discussion points came into the stories, because they had so many questions, and I would, and their mothers would say, well, you know, they asked this, this, and this. And I said, well, why didn't you answer it this way? Well, the mother said, well, we didn't know. And therefore, the discussion points got put into the stories as well.
Wow, that was a lot. I mean, I never thought of it, but there's a couple of things which you said which really struck me. So one is, even as a marketer, I haven't thought of it, but it's totally marketing, where you're right, you give a kid the Disney book, then you give them one of our books on shabby paper, it's totally a different experience. So I never thought of it in that way, where you actually present it in a way that's kind of Disney-like, that's kind of the new age book, and kids will read, so that's awesome. That's great, I never thought of it like that. And also, I know you mentioned five-year thing. I think every... Five-Year Singh is like an anthology in himself. I think every Sikh should read him. I love Guru Nanak Jamatkar. I have it in Punjabi. I have it in English. Obviously, English is way easier for me. How was that? So how did you get to, I mean, you know, you spoke about your background a little in the beginning. Five-Year Singh, even my dad, when he reads it, he can't understand it as well. You know, because I think it's old school Punjabi. So how did you, someone that, you know, hardly went to Punjab, how did you get to that level of, man, I could read 5 years ago now?
You know, it's really interesting. I taught myself Punjabi at the age of 46, the letters, the alphabets. And I learned it in 3 weeks. Day and night, I struggled because I took on the task of volunteering at our Gurdwara in Norwalk. And little did they know, I mean, you know, here I'm saying it out loud, that yes, I had volunteered to be their teacher who knew no Punjabi. So I taught the children three alphabets a week while I learned five or six, just keeping ahead of them. So by 3 weeks, by the end of the third week or the fourth week, I knew all my alphabets and I knew where the trouble I had, my kids would also have that trouble. So we formulated a way. There were a lot of sing-songs. Long story short, they learned. I have no idea, Manpreet, why, after barely being able to connect the letters, the alphabets, that I picked up Guru Nanak Chamatkar. I have no idea. You should have seen the scene at home. There was Guru Nanak Chamatkar in my lap. On the left-hand side is my keda, because I'm still not quite there with the alphabets. On the right side is a dictionary, and somewhere in between is a legal pad with a pen in my hand, and I am translating every line because I feel I need to read this. I have no idea why, because at that time I knew nothing, but it made sense to me. But I needed to read every line at least 10 times before I got it. Or I think I got it. And then I finished a page and I would read my translation and then I would underline things in my legal pad. I don't underline anything in the book because the book is sacred for me. I never do that. And somehow that journey began and they developed a connection where I would literally say, I don't get it. You need to explain it to me. I'm missing this. Why this? And I have no idea, but Guru Nanak Chamatkar spoke to me in ways that I fell in love with Guru Nanak. Guru Nanak, the teacher. While I had fallen in love with Shabad, I fell in love with Guru Nanak. I mean, I was walking with him. I was seeing what he was saying. I was listening to the conversation, and that's what it is. You know, sometimes when I don't write, it's because I can't see. If I can't see, I can't write. It is, I'm right there. I'm the witness. I'm witnessing this journey. And that's why Journey with the Gurus is, the children tell me, it's like they're walking with the Guru, because that's what I'm doing. I am on this journey with Guru, and I feel very blessed as that I'm along for the ride. Literally, this is a conversation between Pacha and Mardana. And I'm witnessing it. So I don't know why. I cannot tell you why it has unveiled the way it has unveiled. But that is honestly the truth. Now, if you ask me to tell you the deep meaning between two lines or this paragraph, I probably won't be able to tell you. But I can tell you what I see. I can tell you this is what I'm seeing. This is what the conversation is. This is the surrounding. This is what is happening. This is what Pacha is saying. You know, I mean, this is how Mardana is feeling. So I have no idea. I mean, you've asked questions which I have not told anyone this process. Not to say, not because I have no idea. I guess maybe nobody has asked. But you have asked, and so therefore I cannot lie. I must be honest to this process. So that's the way it is with me on Journey with the Gurus and Guru Nanak Chamatkar.
I appreciate that. That's very, I mean, I'm very inspired by what you just said right now. Very powerful words, very inspirational story. It makes me want to get my Gurmukhi in order, because I really got to start practicing that as well. My wife knows, but, you know, we need to really start practicing. But wow, didn't know that. That's great. That's awesome. I mean, and now I see you. I see we only got a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to end with this. I see, you know, I mean, I see your translations on Facebook. So I love reading those because they're very, you know, understandable, I guess is a good word for me. I mean, that's great. I think, have you even translated Hukam Namas?
Well, the Hukam Namas for me began, you know, when my mother passed away. The Hukam Namas and I go back a long way. For me, I begin my day with listening to the Hukam from the Barsab, and then I would call my mother in India, and we would discuss the Hukam. And when my mother passed away, you know, it was a very difficult time. While I accepted her death at one level, her passing brought a sadness and a loss that, you know, the best time of the day, which was the morning of the Hukam, became the saddest part. So 6 or 7 months later, you know, the voice within me said, why don't you write what you would say to your mother? And that would maybe lessen your pain. And I began writing, you know, like I was having a conversation with my mother, that this is what the Hukam meant to me. Because over the years, my mother would tell, had told me, you know, there were special Hukams in her life. There were Hukams in her life which were very special to her at certain points, and how she remembered them, and she shared them with me. And, you know, and I mean, it was a connection with my mother. So I started doing that. And as I began doing that, there was, I felt a little better, and I started then sharing it on my Facebook page. And it's really not, I mean, the translation is there, but it really is what it means to me. And, you know, some of them I have saved, and I go back, and when I listen to the Hukam today, and I look back at what I translated or wrote 2 years ago, and I said, but that's not how I feel today. That's not the way, you know, what the Hukam is saying to me today. So it's really interesting how that the Hukam, which is the same verse, and in 2 years, my understanding or the place where I am, it's totally different. So I enjoyed reading that part of that change within me, looking at that. You know, it's like a timeline. It's like a diary. So the Hukamnamas for me are a diary which I for of my internal process or my internal growth. At least I have no idea. And sometimes at some Hukams, when you know, it just verse just flows because they're so magnificent and the consciousness is raised at such a high level that you just want to just be there and just stay there. And, you know, you don't want anything to disturb that consciousness. And then, so I write that verse or I write whatever it is I feel and that stays with me. And that's how, you know, I connect with the Hukam, with the Shabbat of that day. I mean, you know, thank God for technology, how blessed we are that we can hear the voice, you know, emanating from the Barsab. I feel I am right there in, you know, in the 1700s and the 1800s listening right there. How fortunate. And it's not only just me. It is that the entire Sangat, worldwide Sangat, we are listening to the same Hukam. I mean, that's powerful. I feel, you know, that's the Panth. I mean, the entire Panth is listening to that. And from time to time, I'll call up a friend and I'll say, wow, the Hukamnama today, and we'll discuss it. And he'll say yes, or, you know, whatever it is. And that's the power I feel. And that's my energy.
It's definitely truly powerful. Everyone getting the same Hukam around the world, access it anytime from any...
Yep.
Internet-connected device, it is truly powerful. So, well, with that, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate this truly, truly inspirational story. So just before we go, can you just tell anyone listening, you know, how they can reach out to you? Obviously, I think everyone should follow your Facebook page, but how do you have an email you can give out where anyone that wants to contact you can contact you? And also, you know, what's next?
Well, they can contact me through the Sikri website. You know, it's any.core@sikri.org. That would probably be the best way to get me. And, you know, I mean, it's very kind of you to tell them to follow me on my Facebook page. Really, Manpreet? You know, it's not really the best way. But I mean, that's where I put all my, you know, writings on my Facebook page. I don't tweet. I don't do Instagram. It's tough enough keeping up the Facebook page. I would rather be on top of a mountaintop with my books and just writing. But I have chosen this path, or this path has chosen me, where you have to live in the world and be of this world with your mind, whatever it is, and the mountain is within. So that's where we are at.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. And
You're
hopefully
welcome.
We'll
thank
have you
you
back on here soon. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.